So Long and Thanks for All the Fish by Douglas Adams. Read by Martin Freeman. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 92 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This planet has, or had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy for pretty much of the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper, which is odd, because on the whole it wasn't the small green pieces of paper which were unhappy. And so the problem remained. Lots of the people were mean, and most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they'd all made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place, and some said that even the trees had been a bad move, and that no one should ever have left the oceans. And then, one Thursday, nearly 2,000 years after one man had been nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change, a girl, sitting on her own in a small cafe in Rickmansworth, suddenly realised what it was that had been going wrong all this time, and she finally knew how the world could be made a good and happy place. This time it was right. It would work, and no one would have to get nailed to anything. Sadly, however, before she could get to a phone to tell anyone about it, the Earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass, and so the idea was lost, seemingly forever. This is her story. That evening, it was dark early, which was normal for the time of year. It was cold and windy, which was normal. It started to rain, which was particularly normal. A spacecraft landed, which was not. There was nobody around to see it except for some spectacularly stupid quadrupeds who hadn't the faintest idea what to make of it, or whether they were meant to make anything of it, or eat it, or what. So they did what they did to everything, which was to run away from it and try to hide under each other, which never worked. It slipped down out of the clouds, seemingly balanced on a single beam of light. From a distance, you would scarcely have noticed it through the lightning and the storm clouds, but seen from close too, it was strangely beautiful. A grey craft of elegantly sculpted form, quite small. Of course, one never has the slightest notion what size or shape different species are going to turn out to be, but if you were to take the findings of the latest mid-galactic census report as any kind of accurate guide to statistical averages, you would probably guess that the craft would hold about 6 people, and you would be right. You'd probably guess that anyway. The census report, like most such surveys, had cost an awful lot of money and didn't tell anybody anything they didn't already know, except that every single person in the galaxy had 2.4 legs and owned a hyena. Since this was clearly not true, the whole thing had eventually to be scrapped. The craft slid quietly down through the rain, its dim operating lights seeming to wrap it in tasteful rainbows. It hummed very quietly, a hum which became gradually louder and deeper as it approached the ground, and which, at an altitude of 6 inches, became a heavy throb. At last it dropped, and was quiet. A hatchway opened. A short flight of steps unfolded itself. A light appeared in the opening, a bright light streaming out into the wet night, and shadows moved within. A tall figure appeared in the light, looked around, flinched, and hurried down the steps, carrying a large shopping bag under his arm. He turned and gave a single, abrupt wave back to the ship. Already the rain was streaming through his hair. "Thank you," he called out. "Thank you very..." He was interrupted by a sharp crack of thunder. He glanced up apprehensively, and in response to a sudden thought, quickly started to rummage through the large plastic shopping bag, which he now discovered had a hole in the bottom. It had large characters printed on the side which read, to anyone who could decipher the Centaurian alphabet, "Duty-free mega market, Port Braster, Alpha Centauri. Be like the 22nd elephant with heated value in space. Bark." "Hold on," the figure called, waving at the ship. The steps, which had started to fold themselves back through the hatchway, stopped, re-unfolded, and allowed him back in. He emerged again a few seconds later, carrying a battered and threadbare towel, which he shoved into the bag. He waved again, hoisted the bag under his arm, and started to run for the shelter of some trees, as, behind him, the spacecraft had already begun its ascent. Lightning flitted through the sky and made the figure pause for a moment, and then hurry onwards, revising his path to give the trees a wide berth. He moved swiftly across the ground, slipping here and there, hunching himself against the rain which was falling now with ever-increasing concentration, as if being pulled from the sky. More lights. Not lightning this time, but more diffused and dimmer lights which played slowly over the horizon and faded. The figure paused again on seeing them, and then redoubled his steps, making directly towards the point on the horizon at which they had appeared. And now the ground was becoming steeper, sloping upwards, and after another 200 or 300 yards, it led at last to an obstacle. The figure paused to examine the barrier, and then dropped the bag he was carrying over it before climbing over himself. Hardly had the figure touched the ground on the other side, when there came, sweeping out of the rain towards him, a machine, lights streaming through the wall of water. The figure pressed back as the machine streaked towards him. It was a low bulbous shape, like a small whale surfing, sleek, grey and rounded, and moving at terrifying speed. The figure instinctively threw up his hands to protect himself, but was hit only by a sluice of water as the machine swept past and off into the night. It was illuminated briefly by another flicker of lightning crossing the sky, which allowed the soaked figure by the roadside a split second to read a small sign at the back of the machine before it disappeared. To the figure's apparent incredulous astonishment, the sign read, "My other car is also a Porsche."